So, Jeremy, we like to start our conversation with probably the most important question of all time. Cake or pie?
I'm going to go with pie guy.
Oh. Really?
Absolutely.
Did Ben pay you to say that?
Pie's definitely the best choice.
No, nobody paid me to say that. That was of my own fruition.
Good job. You're right.
Well, I don't know if I'd say right, but...
Well, it's correct.
Sure. I mean, it's an opinion, and opinions can't be right or wrong.
Except this one.
So, favorite pie?
Yeah. Yes. Favorite pie.
Pie is the favorite. What is your favorite pie, Jeremy?
I'm going to go with either cherry or apple.
Fruit pie. Okay. Sure. I mean, I don't really like pie, so I believe those are two kinds of pies.
They're valid choices.
Sure. Absolutely valid choices. In that they are
great
pie.
Choices.
Why do you like cake so much?
It's better than pie.
It's fair.
Frosting and the crumb of the cake. Yeah.
Realistically, you could put frosting on pie if you're really that into frosting.
Yeah, but then you don't have the cake part.
No, but you have pie.
I'll pass. Welcome to Build Things Better. I'm one of your hosts, Zach Reinhardt, joined with my co-host, Ben Peterson, and our guest, Jeremy Estel of Roost Artisan Home. Welcome, Jeremy.
Hello. Thank you.
Jeremy, thanks for agreeing to be here and be our guinea pig for this.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I've admired your work for a really long time, basically since I met you 5 years ago.
It's creeping up on that, yeah.
Why don't you give us a little backstory about what got you here to Omaha and kind of...
Really, the way that the whole thing came about was I was in school in Little Rock, Arkansas for applied design. And one Christmas, I was home for vacation and... All the three branches of my family, my mom, dad, both my brothers and their wives, had saved the same article about Bench from the Omaha World Herald. And each of them, and none of them had ever collaborated on this, but it just so happened that they all kind of pulled them out around the same time. And we had a pretty decent laugh about that, obviously. But then when I started reading about what you're doing, it was the exact type of situation that I was really looking for myself. And had lived away from Nebraska for close to 20 years. First a stint in North Carolina and then Arkansas for several years. And when I read the article, Dad and I actually came down that same weekend and spoke with you, I believe, when you were over at the old Harney location.
Yeah.
And then it was, the following spring?
Yep.
I think May.
So. Yeah.
That I had decided to just sort of pack everything up and come on back home.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we're glad you did.
Thank you.
So how would you define your craft or what would you describe yourself as?
Describing my craft. I would say, you know, it's an amalgamation for me of a lot of different things. Not only is it the craft of furniture building, but, you know, I do feel or try to bring in several different perspectives into that. Because the program that we had was not necessarily furniture based. It was wood as craft. So that encompassed a lot of different sins. You know, it was a lot of carving. It was a lot of manipulation. It was thinking about color, wood textures, those types of things. And so I think I have a tendency to incorporate as much of that as I possibly can into my own work. And it was also, because it was so based on experimentation, I think I try to keep that avenue alive in a lot of my personal work as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That definitely comes through in your work.
Yeah, thanks.
So I know you have kind of a significant concept behind the name of your business and kind of the look and feel of all of the products you create. You've really given that a lot of thought. So I guess what is the name of your company? I don't think we've mentioned that yet. And how do you come up with that? And then kind of the story behind that as well.
For our listeners, mentioned Roost Artisan Home is the name of your company, but how did you come upon that name? Does the name sort of play into the design and the aesthetic and the feel of the company,
the business? Yeah, absolutely. And it was something that I actually, that particular name I rethought when I came to Nebraska. I don't think I've ever actually even told you this. Where I first started out, I don't know, I was in school and I was still going for what has become a thing in the monosyllabic naming of your company. And I have always felt that there's a reason behind that, that a one word name is a lot of times much easier to remember for people. You know, and if you pick the right one, it adds a certain amount of distinction. But what I settled upon the first time I tried to name my company was Ease. And E-A-S-E.
Okay. As in easy or simple.
Correct. But I also sort of felt like it was a cute little play, maybe like off of my last name, where it begins with an E. And sure. So, you know, like E apostrophe S, Ease.
Oh, yeah.
But explaining that to somebody obviously
became, just like you just did. Yeah, yep.
Became a little bit of a chore.
The 500th time you explained that was not going to be fun.
And it was never even particularly clever. So in coming back to Nebraska, I started thinking about how I wanted to brand and think about what having a Omaha or Nebraska identity would sound like. And so I also thought back to one of my larger influences, which was my grandparents and how my grandmother raised chickens when we were growing up on the ranch. And so it just became logical and really just sort of hit me one day that Roost made a whole lot of sense. The artisan home, obviously, I think part of that was because of my art background, and the maker nature seemed to make sense as a second title. And then the home, because really what I was trying to do was create home goods for people. So I would say that I've given a lot of thought recently to even making that more specific, maybe towards what I do, and rebranding as Roost Midwest Modern.
Okay, sure.
You know, I think that makes a lot of sense as well.
Absolutely.
So you say home goods. I understand that you're primarily a furniture builder. Is that what you want people to understand about Roost Artisan Home? Do you want to just be building furniture? Do you want to be doing more than furniture?
There have been, you know, Ben's, I think, certainly seen some of the alternative things that in my own experimentation that I've done, where I've actually even made primarily for myself quilts. I've done a couple of those, and I think maybe I've shown you a picture of one. Occasionally, I've done some lighting. So it hasn't all just been, you know, specifically utilitarian furniture. Some of that has been decorative as well.
You've done some neat wall hangings.
Correct.
Taking commissions, okay. Doing lighting.
So Roost Artisan Home, sort of a home goods, is more holistic than simply furniture.
Yeah, I was really trying to think of it as a blanket term, while maybe the rest of that blanket hasn't necessarily caught on quite as much.
Okay.
And so, yes, it has just been primarily cabinetry, tables, the occasional chair, you know, those types of things, which people sort of stamp as unique, but very, very usable on a day-to-day basis.
So, Jeremy, where do you draw inspiration from for your furniture designs?
As I stated before, certainly that Native American aspect really sort of comes in. Not necessarily like in a Navajo or a possibly even primitive way, perhaps, but the whole ideal of using everything at your disposal. I think from that standpoint, that definitely factors into what I do. And I recognized that when I was in school, and one of the things that probably inspired me the most was the architecture of a gentleman named Samuel Mockbee, who had the rural studio in Alabama. And his principle, or what he taught his students, was going into the poorest rural parts of Alabama to teach his students what he called the architecture of decency. During the summer times, the students themselves would design and build houses for impoverished communities in Alabama. And in doing that, they were able to secure grants from, you know, they had corporate partnerships to provide the new materials. But then they were tasked with also reusing as much as they possibly could from the dilapidated buildings, any kind of indigenous materials that they could find, whether that be in junkyards, yards, really, because things were just strewn about. Anything that could be reincorporated and reused in the design is really what he preached. And he and his students came up with some amazing architectural discoveries that are used a lot today, and that other programs started to emulate. You know, I think he was an amazing guy, not only as an architecture, but just a humanitarian. So I think a lot of that factors into what I do as well. And then also my grandparents, again, them being Depression era folks, and seeing how handy my grandfather was in doing a lot with a little. And they saved everything, you know, after they passed away, going into their house to go in and see my grandmother's cupboards with bread bags, full of bread bags, or every twist tie that came off of a loaf of bread since 1950,
yeah,
or whenever they started using twist ties.
Yeah,
you know, that was amazing to me. Hoarding, sure, but practical, yes.
Yeah,
I think with the Depression era thing, however, you know, and it's pretty subtle in the way that I do things, but I have seen where they have done reproductions of color photographs of Depression era photos. And so quite often, even the color palettes that I use, I very subtly will do that in a lot of my own work to try and emulate a little bit of that feel, which I think is it's probably more fun for me than it is for anything else.
I think that's great.
And even some of the shapes. I've got books on Depression era furniture where I will not... obviously, I don't copy necessarily like the ornateness of a Depression-era piece of furniture, but the shapes I will definitely use, but bring them into a modern, cleaner setting.
Sure. Yeah. So a question that I want to ask probably everybody that we interview, but that I think is somewhat telling, is what's your favorite tool?
Anybody that is a hardcore woodworker is probably going to be horrified by my answer on this, and cool. I get it. and I think what you would rebuke me with is valid. But honestly, my favorite tool, and I think the thing that I use the most, is the pin nailer. I think
scandalous.
It really is one of the best modern tools, and you know, I will definitely throw in the modern in terms of being able to accomplish projects quickly, efficiently, but still look professional. I really do think that the pin nailer has been a godsend of technology. Of course, you know, I don't have the domino like you do, which well, I get to borrow yours, but
totally different beasts. But I mean, you're definitely right. Like with modern adhesives that are going to set up super strong anyway, I mean, the pin nailer is just there to hold things together while the glue sets.
Absolutely. And it can be masked and rendered
invisible. Holes,
right. Well, and I think a lot of people see this modern technology as being invalid because they think that only, you know, quality is only created using centuries old techniques and centuries old joinery. And the reality is that we're in the 21st century and you know, there's technology that's available to us that creates just as good a product, whatever the craft is, right? There's always that person that says, you're not using the original technique, but
well,
that doesn't make the new technique invalid.
That's the thing. It's like, I don't think it's in any way a burn on the old techniques, nor does it ever discard those by any means. I don't think there's a single project where I don't have to probably use a chisel or, you know, some sort of old school method in order to build. I think if I don't think those things will ever go out of style. I think that some of the new technology is supplementary to those.
Sure. So. Yeah, and I think once you have a good understanding of how like actual solid wood joinery works, supplementing with other things to speed up the process is a huge benefit, because you're not using these pin nails to hold things together. Like these pin nails are not holding table legs onto tables.
Right.
They're holding one piece of wood next to the other until the glue dries
I think kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, if some of that is incredibly reflective on how you can price things. If if you want to make something from scratch, and there are people that can and still do that and charge enormous sums for what they're doing, fantastic. But I think in a current marketplace, it's harder to establish yourself in that upper echelon than it is to find that sweet spot where you are market competitive and still able to make things more quickly.
Right. You're in a production environment. This isn't just building furniture for fun or for your mom because she saw that thing that you made.
Yeah.
You're producing furniture that you still have to make money building.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just a technique for doing that.
Yeah. And it, you know, whether fortunately or unfortunately, that is a factor in how you approach a project.
Well, and the difference is accessibility, right? So something that you build with pin nails to hold two pieces together while the glue dries is going to be quicker.
Yeah.
Less resource intensive, so you can sell it at a more accessible price point. Whereas somebody who's only using sort of through tenons and mortise and tenon joints and lap joints and things that are very technical and beautiful, to be certain, those take more time, more resources, more room for error and waste, so they just cost more.
And it's also, depending on the application, what you're using the pin nailer for, it's 3-4 times as fast as pulling out a dozen clamps.
Right.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And clamp would probably be my second favorite tool. Obviously,
absolutely,
you really couldn't build anything without those. So,
That's great. Yeah. What piece are you most proud of?
Hmm. I think that actually sort of goes back to school as well. And again, I don't know, maybe if I've ever shown you images of, there were a few things that we were tasked with projects. And one of those specifically was to create two different types of seating using similar forms. And so the idea hit upon me to take a bending form that was made out of plywood and create a seat for another piece that would be bent around that. But then I took apart the bending form and created that into a bench as well. And so they were going off of that same core shape, was able to create a Japanese love seat and a Norwegian love seat using the same two principles and ideas.
Oh, wow.
And so I think maybe that is one of the things. But it also became, it became a through line, I think, with the way that I've sort of approached furniture. In that I'm bringing in Native American principles with trying to use the whole carcass, or not always necessarily starting with new material with which to base a piece around. Some of it's found object, some of it's older materials, and then using new around it, or vice versa, you know, inserting something old into new. And I really like that principle of building, for sure.
What is the difference between a Japanese love seat and a Norwegian love seat?
The style. It's a little bit of it's the cuts. And again, I can show you pictures of these afterwards, but the Nipponic, the Japanese, had a little bit more of almost like reverse tapers to the legs. It was the colors, the textures that I chose that sort of, you know, spoke to a Japanese nationality.
This is more of a design that's more than sort of a nomenclature. It's more the design than the naming of the piece.
Correct.
Okay.
So we've talked a lot about the Midwest, about kind of, I think some, I don't know, sentimentalities that come often around here. We're wanting to highlight makers from all over the Midwest, especially from Omaha, because that's where we're at, but from surrounding cities as well. So one question we're wanting to ask each maker is, who's your favorite maker in the Midwest?
Oh, God, this is going to be tough. Again, two of these have Omaha ties, but are now in Kansas City, and I think Emily Reinhart.
Mm-hmm.
They're
the object enthusiast.
I think Emily is fantastic in what she does, how she markets herself, and quite honestly, she really seems to do it with ease, and that makes me jealous. But she's really, really good at what she does. There's another gentleman down there that I don't know how many people, if you guys have heard of. Do you know who Cody Brown is?
No.
He's an interior designer and maker there who is from Omaha, but I believe moved to Kansas City a couple of years ago. And if you haven't seen what he does, he has R24 Studios is the name. And his stuff is just fantastic. He, if you can believe this, mixes, and I think he would concur this as a adequate way to maybe describe what he does, is takes glam and Midwest aesthetics, like almost farm aesthetics, and blends them together. And it's crazy how he pairs the two. It's really amazing. And I wouldn't be at all surprised to see that guy on like HGTV someday. Wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Very cool.
And then not a maker necessarily, but I think Hutch has been incredibly influential in supporting not only the maker community, but bringing a modern aesthetic to Omaha that didn't exist maybe before they came along. And doing it well and doing it successfully.
Yeah, breaking people out of the mold of I buy furniture at Nebraska Furniture Mart, and that's the only place, you know, and that's my understanding of furniture and interior design. They've definitely brought modern furniture and made it accessible.
Yeah, and they really opened people's eyes to how something new is not a scary thing.
Right. Agreed.
And they've done a really good job highlighting local makers and showing Omaha folks that might not make it down to some Omaha studio somewhere, showing them that there's a lot of good talent in Omaha and there's real people making real good stuff that should be in a real space.
Absolutely.
And pairing it alongside with more famous manufacturers to give people the visual of, well, that works.
Here's how I use this.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yep.
Absolutely. I think that's what people need. They need to know, all right, this is a really cool piece of furniture that Jeremy built, but how do I fit it into my room? How does it work with my existing couch?
Right.
How does it work with, you know, and I think that you can, they're sort of leading people through that in a really productive way.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
And they're just, it's a company run by some really rad people.
Yeah, so exactly.
That helps.
That never hurts at all.
Thank you for joining us, Jeremy. If you want to learn more about what Jeremy does or see photos of his furniture, you can check out the podcast page. I'm also guessing you have a website or a Facebook you can direct
people
to.
So far, Instagram has been enough to convince people that I know what I'm doing.
And that your Instagram handle?
Is Roost Artisan Home. Like, it's all one word.
So check out at Roost Artisan Home on Instagram. Thanks again, Jeremy, for joining us and discussing your philosophy on making and how you got your start and the things that get you going. We appreciate you taking the time. Listeners, thanks for listening. We will catch you next time.